Good morning and welcome to Bodies and Souls, the space in which you hear authentic conversations from real Jewish women talking about topics that are relevant to you. You're going to walk away from the conversation inspired, connected, and feeling uplifted. Today we have Manya Lazaroff with us. Manya is going to talk to us about gratitude, what that means, where the basis is in Judaism, what the science tells us about gratitude, and how we're going to implement this in our lives in a way that is much more far-reaching and practical than what we usually associate gratitude with, a gratitude journal. This is a conversation that's going to be meaningful and attainable for you. So without further ado, here is Manya.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Bodies and Souls. Your host for today is Rivki Boyarski. Today we have Manya Lazaroff joining us all the way from Texas. Manya is a shlucha on campus out in Aggieland. I don't remember the name of her university, but I remember it's Aggieland. She is a mother. She speaks about topics that are pertaining to Jewish women, and she is passionate about living a Torah life and learning and growing and improving us as Yidden. So today we're actually going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to Manya's heart, which is gratitude. But before we do that, Manya, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you towards this topic.
So I'm a girl who was raised in Crown Heights and then in Muncie, found myself living in the wonderful little place. Yes, it's called Aggieland. It's actually College Station, Texas. I'd say centrally isolated because I most often get asked, oh, is it Dallas? Is it Houston? Is it San Antonio? Is it Austin? And really, we are, you know, smack in the middle of all of those. And we are here together for 17 years. My husband and I were in shluchas for 25, but in college campus shluchas primarily for 17 years. And here we're working hard to raise children, thank God, 8 wonderful children ranging from a year old to 24 years old. So we've quite the range. And I noticed when I got here, I think there's one of these most fascinating gifts of being on shluchas and adulting is that you get a chance and opportunity to really revisit ideas that you've kind of just made rote or automatic in your life. And when you start to see them through the lens of other people's experience, like, wait, what is that tradition? And what is that custom? And explain that to me. And why do we do that? Then it actually puts you on this beautiful journey that I've learned so much from my shluchas, this beautiful journey to really rediscover and re-explore and kind of take a deep dive into ideas that were just part of my life, right? And that's really where it started. It started with kind of being thrust into the mode of teaching, even though that wasn't something I anticipated. I was very comfortable with preschool and Hebrew school and all these things. Suddenly adult education is taking a real primary like focus in my life. And I'm thrust into this place of teaching. And now I have to really own and re-examine a lot of fundamentals. And so how did I specifically get into this talk, into this kind of subject? So along the road and the journey of life, as we all know, it takes us in many, many places. And a lot of what I discovered is so much of my experiences can be seen in so many different ways or felt, seen, processed through many different lenses. And I obviously, we know, and I discovered really on a very personal level, and it all starts here. It all starts with my mindset and how I perceive the situation. So I can perceive the exact same situation through two different lenses, and the circumstances don't change, the experience doesn't change, but how I see them really affect me. So you have, let's say, certain children that are maybe challenging you, or dynamics in your marriage that are not simple, or dynamics with your shluchos, or the place you're living, or the place Hashem sent you. And every single one of those layers can be seen very differently. And I started to really pay attention to my mindset when it came to things. So I would say it started off with experiencing, kind of going through life and trying to be more conscious and aware and have better experiences. I would say coupled with when you're raising your kids with no schools, with no friends, in the middle of nowhere, you have to truly believe you're in the best place that you're meant to be. Because otherwise, the guilt and the shame and the pain that you can feel for your children and the uncertainty, the guilt, all these toxic negative emotions, maybe even resentment, can really, really ripple and trickle into very unhealthy places for yourself, for your family, and then obviously to your shluchas, to your students, to your community. So to do it better, we had to like stay in the healthiest mindset. And also, how do I make sure to raise, you know, thank God, children with all those challenges without feeling like, oh, I'm a victim. There's something wrong with me. My life of shluchas leaves me miserable. So whether it's personal or for my children, I would say that's like the launch pad of where my mindset started to take such a strong lead. Now, how that leads to gratitude is another layer to the story, which I'll share a little bit throughout. So incidentally, when you're on Chilchasen campus, and or the closest city is 100 miles away, so it's an hour and 45 minutes. And one of our friends, her son had a bar mitzvah, and it was my very good friend's son's bar mitzvah. And we went to the bar mitzvah, and the boy, Mendel, spoke all about gratitude and all about the power of gratitude. And he tied it really into Moda'ani. And I came back, and every Friday night I give a Dvar Torah, because I feel like it's really essential that my students don't only know that I can make a good kugel, right? And have cute babies. They need to understand that for a Jewish woman, especially as a Chabad woman, the emphasis that the Rebbe put on Lomad Torah and really living a very mindful, intentional life where Chassidus and Torah is so front and center, like we have to take our seat at the table with Lomad Torah. And incidentally, on a sidebar, I've spoken to many groups that are women from across different backgrounds, and they're always fascinated as a Chabad woman. How do you know all this? And I'm like, no, we learn. Like, straight up, the Rebbe pushed Chabad women to take their seat at the table with Lomad Torah. And, you know, it was not, oh, well, you just make a good kugel and have cute babies or a nice Shabbos table, which all of those things are important, right? So I started speaking on Friday nights. It actually happened very accidentally. I showed up at a Shabbaton in Florida. My students came running to me and said, oh, you're on the program. And I'm going to be honest, I don't even think I knew what Parsha was. I was not teaching at all. I was not learning at all. I was panicked. I ran to the room, went on Chabad.org, got up in front of a room of like 1,000 people, and that was it. The rest is history. Every Friday night, I was like, okay, I got to share the Torah. And so that Friday night, I spoke about this, and I just saw the emotion in the room, and I saw that this message resonated, clicked, a light bulb went on across the room. And at the same time, now, this is something that we see across the world, but specifically on college campuses, the mental health crisis is tremendous. Pre-COVID, pre-October 7th, the statistic was that 72% of American college students are either on anti-anxiety meds or antidepressants, which was such a jarring number. And along with really looking after our students' spiritual well-being and nourishing them and their actual well-being. Like, you know, we laugh, students have a fender bender, they call us. We go quickly to, you know, answer. So it's one of the cops that, are you guys, do you just go to all accidents in town? We're like, no, we're not ambulance chasers. We're just helping our community. So as campus shulchan, you're called upon to do many things. But I have to be honest, aside from the matzo ball soups and the like deliver to your door when you're sick and the warm, loving Shabbat and the hug and the home away from home, all that stuff, we really realize we need to pay attention to the mental health of our students and wellness. And how do we proactively really give them tools that we can? And when I heard this talk at the bar mitzvah, like, whoa, this is ours. This is our mental health tool. Why are we not doing this? So I actually, after speaking about it that Friday night, I threw myself into research. What was the link between gratitude and how it affected our mindset? And what was the link between that and the Moda'ani? So that's how I got into this, because I'm a little bit of a nerd. And while I wasn't the best student in school, I'm very curious. And I need to understand things from a deeper perspective. So that's what threw me into this like research project.
I love that. So you fell into this topic and into teaching accidentally, but then it became this really intentional, really factually based thing that you then really connected to and you feel really passionate about it. So you kind of started off the conversation with saying gratitude is important, especially in my context, which is your lived experience, which is very important. But I think that no matter what the context is, whoever is living whatever life, with whatever blessings they have, this is an extremely relevant conversation, whether everything is going right or whether everything is going wrong. Like, it's still the same relevant, which is so fascinating. I think that's an important thing for people to know. So if someone's like, oh yeah, I'm grateful, I'm okay, hashtag blessed, right? Like, I'm good. Guess what? We still have to connect intentionality to our gratitude. So how does one find gratitude in the chaos and stress?
Okay. I want to pause your question about how do we find gratitude in the chaos and the stress in a minute. I want to speak to your point that you mentioned first, because your first point was so strong. You know, we hear all about this toxic positivity. everything's fine. And we live in a world where social media, where everyone else's Chabad house is doing better. Everyone else's fitness routine is better. New year, new me. Everyone else's kids. I mean, like what they're doing for Mother's Day. Like we could go on and on of what the world seems like and feels like, let alone post October 7th, the world has really, really taken a very intense shift and a very uncomfortable shift. Now, I think it's felt globally. I think on a college campus, we're feeling it very, very, very strongly. We're front and center with this. And so there's no doubt that, you know, I laugh when you said that everything is going right. There's no such thing as everything going right, because that's actually not the story of life. It just doesn't. That's not how life works, right? So I always like baggage. Welcome. You're human. You got issues. That means you're alive, right? So to think that, look, okay, today things are going well, but then there's going to be struggles along the way. Of course, that's part of the human lived experience for all of us. It's part of being human. We always say that, you know, angels are omdim. They're stagnant, and humans are mahalchim. We're going, we're evolving, we're moving, we're doing, and we're created as human beings, right? We're supposed to learn how to be, but really we're created in the image of Hashem, and Hashem is always doing, and therefore we are actually at our best when we're being productive. And part of that up and down of life, you know, if you look at a life, a person's who's alive, who's attached to a heart monitor, that very sign of life is the up and down, right? And like the flat line is a sign of stagnation. So, and it's not a sign of life, it's a sign of death. So we know that as human beings, we are meant to be going, doing, being, and we know that part of that operating system is the ups and downs. So the question is, what tools we have to do so? And how do we navigate those downs and appreciate those ups? Like, how do I use this without going into this toxic positivity or this fake reality, or what other generations did was suppression? Like we just forget the emotions. There's no time, space, you know, for any of that. So how do we find this medium, and where does Judaism come into it? Where do the basic practices we have come into it? And that's really where the crux of this comes from. So at this bar mitzvah, this young boy, Mendel, my good friend's son, and he has, you know, like medical condition, and he really understood the gift of each day. And, you know, most bar mitzvah boys, they get up and their speech is like, today I'm a man. And like, you look at them, they're squeaky, their voice, like, what man? You know, like you're barely scratching 5 feet, right? His talk was so different, and it moved me, which is why I shared it with the students. He did research a little bit on Moda'ani. And then when I came home and I spoke about it, and I saw that it clicked with the students and it was such a game changer, I threw myself into researching it. And it took me down this fascinating road, understanding the psychology and neurology of human behavior, which is not usual. Like, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a neurologist, I'm just a curious Jew who loves to learn, who loves to dive deeper into things, and who loves to understand things from a lens that is like a healthier, stronger lens. So what I discovered is that our brains are actually hardwired. It's called the negativity bias. You can research it if anyone's curious, like this, all these things you can go find online, you know, like the research is not, you know, I can't say I went into a lab and took neurology classes, right? And the negativity bias is like, let's say you're having a really, really great day and everything's going well and everything's smooth. And then like one thing happens, your brain is going to hold on to that negative experience, kind of like Velcro, whereas the positivity will slide off like Teflon, like a Teflon frying pan. And I actually had this experience once, fascinating. I was going to give this workshop 100 miles away in a Monorthodox middle school or high school. It was a high school. And my friend asked me to come and do it. And I was like, sure, no problem, I'm on my way. And that day, I was just feeling very tired, very drained. And I said to myself, you know what, like, I'm really like, I'm dreading the drive, you know, basically 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And he's like, you know what, my day is not so heavy. I'm happy to drive you. And okay, at that point, our triplets, thank God we have triplets, they're 14 at that point, you know, it was a while ago. And they were 9 or 10. And there's no schools here, so they were online school. But if we left for too long, they wouldn't have school. So last second, we like, hey, pull them out of school. They jump in the car, they go. Everyone's driving. My husband's driving. I'm taking a nap. I got some work done. Kids aren't fighting, which is kind of miraculous. There was no devices distracting them. And suddenly, like 5 minutes before we got there, we hit a bit of traffic. Now, what happens as the car pulls up? Now I'm like going to be running to just make it for that little time slot that she had for the workshop. What comes out of my mouth as soon as she says, how was your drive? Was the hour and 50 minutes I went really, really, really well, where my husband dropped everything, drove me there, drove me back. I took a nap. The kids didn't fight. What do you think I said?
That it was awful. It was just a horrible.
Oh my God, the traffic, you know? Probably part of it was trying to, like, I don't know, maybe justify like why I was rushing, or maybe I was feeling the stress. Like, you know, when we feel stress, the tension rises up in our body and it's not comfortable. So I basically, as those words were coming out of my mouth, because I was aware of this state of our brain, I laughed at myself. And I told her, ironically, this is going into the workshop. And so I saw that happen to myself where like, wow, your brain held on to the 5 minutes of stress as opposed to the other thing. So we're hardwired that way, interestingly enough. There's another theory called the missing tile syndrome. And an interesting thing, Mona Lisa was missing for I don't know how long actually. She was stolen. She was the Mona Lisa painting. And more people came to look at the empty space where Mona Lisa wasn't than the whole time Mona Lisa was. So we have this like weird phenomenon of like things that aren't right, that or the missing tile. You look at something and there's a missing tile, that's where your eye is going to be drawn. Okay, so I'm trying to understand why are we created that way. Like we know that however we're created is how Hashem wants us to be created. So there's a reason. So it takes me to understand that we need to be very proactive in order to help our brain operate to its best capacity. It's not a mistake, right? And whenever I'm having this conversation with students, I'll be like, well, why do you think that? And they come up with great theories like, well, we wouldn't advance, or we'd be scared, or we would, you know, avoid conflict. Like they come up with great reasons as to why we're hardwired that way. But it gave me an understanding of the mindset of understanding other people, myself, like, okay, you could hold on to the negative. And once we know something, it can come to our consciousness and we can be like, oh, let me see what I could do about that to override that or to put that in its place or to utilize that tool where it's meant to be. So then I keep going further into this research about neurology of the brain. I'm like, well, that's interesting. And then I find that basically your brain, brain waves is the science of understanding what frequency your brain is operating on while you're whatever you're doing. So if you're sleeping, your brain wave is on one frequency, like alpha, beta, gamma, delta, that's your brain frequency. And what I discover is that experienced meditators try to get their brain into alpha mode. Now, what's alpha mode? It's basically where you're kind of barely awake. You're very, very calm. I'm actually going to read the definition because I think it will be more clear. You're awake but relaxed. You're not processing much information. It's right when you get up in the morning and right before you go to sleep. You're actually naturally in that state of being. And it's the goal of experienced meditators because, and they try to enter that stage. It's basically the most receptive and absorbent brain state, mental state for us as human beings. So it's great for self-hypnosis. It's great for mental reprogramming. And what's fascinating is, okay, well, the same Hashem who made our brain with this negativity bias or this missing tile syndrome or all the way our brain, you know, the Velcro Teflon effect also made our brain that right when we wake up and right before we go to bed, our brain is in this alpha mode. Well, what's the function of that? What do we do about that? How do we utilize that? Again, consciousness and awareness of this reality of what's going on neurologically is tremendous for us. So when we kind of go into this more and I'm trying to understand, so two things are going on simultaneously. I'm trying to understand this Bar Mitzvah boys talk about gratitude and Moda Ani. I'm trying to understand why it moved my students so much more than the regular weekly Dvar Torah. And I'm also trying to understand where it interplays with how we're hardwired as human beings. While I'm at the same time simultaneously trying to really take a deeper sense of responsibility into my husband and I are trying to really say like, how can we help our students with their mental health and their wellness? Because this is such a plague on our campuses and in society. It's immobilizing for so many. So how do we take that seriously? And so all this is kind of coalescing at the same time, right? That's all like coming together. And then I'm researching happiness and I'm researching what are the thoughts out there on happiness? Because I've learned all my life about happiness. So, you know, Hasidim were known as the Freilacher, the happy ones, and Mishnah Chasadar and Marbim Besimcha, always increase in joy, and how, yes, you know, Ibdwas Hashem Besimcha, and like, you know, all these things that I've learned all my life, they're catchphrases, they're great, they're part of our Yahagas, they're fundamentals, but like, okay, but now I'm a human being and it's 2020, whatever, and life is chaotic and I'm overwhelmed and. How do I utilize these tools? How do they become real integral parts of my life? So all this is kind of coming together. And what I discover is that basically there was this very, very famous psychologist who got to Harvard University and he noticed that most of the people who were there were like miserable. They were depressed. And he's like, well, this is interesting because like anyone who made it to Harvard, it was on your bucket list. Like you wanted to go. You didn't like, oops, by mistake, get into Harvard. You, oops, by mistake, get into a community college. But you don't, oops, by mistake, right? So he's like, something doesn't add up. These people want to be here and they're miserable. he actually gets permission from the university to live amongst the students for 10 years in their dorms. Not in a creepy way, but in a way of like, what's going on here? And he delivers the talk that is given, that is actually the, it gives a talk called The Happiness Advantage. And his and it's basically, you can find it, I mean, online. It was the largest attended speech at Harvard University. So I would say pre-October 7th, Harvard was really known for prestige. So we're going to still go with that for now. And in his talk, he basically says that the key to happiness is gratitude. Done. Full stop. I mean, we can go into his research and all that, but it was rigorous. It was a long study. And that's what his main thing is. The conclusion is that when you wake up in the morning, when you start your day with happiness, and you not only start your day with it, but you verbalize, express verbally what that happiness is or what you're grateful for, it's a key to happiness. Now, what I found fascinating is that if you fast forward, there is a beautiful, beautiful, from a mimer of the Rebbe Marash. And I'm going to quote it because I really would not want to not share this in its full words because the richness of the words itself. But basically, the Rebbe Marash is writing that when we have emotions and we feel them very strongly and we ignore them, then they'll dissipate, right? Let's say you're really, really angry at someone, but you hold off and you don't express it right away. How about this? When's the last time you expressed it right away in the moment? Positive emotions or toxic emotions, it grows. Maybe, you know, like the time you maybe it doesn't happen to you in your house. Every once in a while, I say things I don't mean, or I say things I mean. No, you know,
I'm perfect, Manya. I never ever do anything so perfect. Just so everyone knows, so it's only by Manya.
Okay. Only in our house. Yeah. So in our house, sometimes I will lose it and say things I should not say in the heat of the moment. And what happens is that ripple effect of that toxic energy just spreads and grows. Now, what if I calm down? And I give myself, whether breathing or whatever it is that I step, you know, step out of the room, I go to sleep and wake up refreshed and maybe a little less cranky. Guess what? I'm in a better mind space. Guess what? I can express myself more clearly. Guess what? I can separate my toxic defensive emotions, maybe my triggers from the information I want to share and the real message, or what's really getting at me. And I could see it more objectively. I could see it calmly. I could see it more, not from that panic state of being. I could see it with more, you know, mindfulness and in a healthier place. So in this mind, the Rebbe Marash basically describes that when we say emotion, when we express verbally emotions, positive ones, he actually says it in the nice way, the Rebbe Marash writes, that when we express positive emotions of love and feelings of affection verbally, then it grows that love and it strengthens that emotion. And he says, and the opposite is true for the negative. Okay. So I'm like, whoa, here's this big macher in the field of psychology who's coming up with this, like, got to express gratitude right away and not just express it, we got to verbalize it. And now I'm like, wow, okay, cool. I got to keep researching. And I do.
It's so interesting that there's a correlation between the Hasidus and the science here, that the science is saying you have to notice the gratitude. Gratitude is key, but you also have to verbalize it. And then the Rebbe Marash, who, by the way, for whoever's listening, who is not Chabad, the Rebbe Marash was one of the Lubavitcher Rebbe of past. And what he says is basically the exact same thing, like years and years prior to all the science catching up, which is, take a break when you need to do it, focus on the gratitude, and really take the time to express it. So we're seeing a correlation both in science and in Torah saying the exact same thing. But so, what does this mean?
Okay, so I want to add one more layer to this, because I think with the Rebbe Marash wasn't thinking specifically about gratitude. The Rebbe Marash was about expressing emotions, verbalizing your emotions.
So it wasn't about the gratitude, it was about...
Not necessarily. It was about, where does the intersection between emotions that I'm feeling to the words that are coming out of my mouth, how do they intersect? What's the advantage of expressing them or not expressing them? Suppressing them or not suppressing them? So which I think is very fascinating in and of itself, that we can like take a deep dive into that alone for another... Right, that's a whole different recording.
Especially in the historic
correct.
Context of where...
Correct. Context of what, like generationally, not, correct. Yeah. This is not like a generation of let's talk about your feelings. Correct. Okay. So that is that, that's to be noted. Okay. So now I'm like still going down this, I'm not going to say rabbit hole, but I'm still taking this dive into understanding this. And I find this other really brilliant mind in the positive psychology field. And his name is Brian Tracy. And he basically, his whole thing is basically that your first thoughts in your morning are, and he brings the signs and then not all of it, are like a rudder of a ship. They steer the direction of your ship. So, you know, the captain's there with the steering wheel, but really it's that little rudder in the back that's actually determining which way it goes. Now that rudder isn't shiny and it isn't glorious. It's kind of usually murky and not very visible. It's in the water, maybe covered in moss. And what his main thought was that be aware of what crosses your subconsciousness, your consciousness, what crosses your mindset right when you wake up, because that is going to steer you. So how many of us wake up and we pick up our phone, we check the news, or we check what happened overnight? And his literal suggestion is don't wake up and take your time and think of what's going through your mind, because that's going to affect your outlook and your attitude. And it will steer your ship for the day. So I'm like, wow, this is wild. Because again, now I'm seeing this intersection between the Hasidus and the neurology and the Torah. And I'm like, this is just phenomenal. This is what's going on here. And I continue on, of course, because I'm not yet fully satisfied with the deeper understanding of it. And I actually took a dive into understanding what happens when we sleep and the cellular regeneration. And like, we always learned that the neshama ascends on high, 60th of death. And now it comes back into our guf, and understanding that it's paralleling this fundamental biological phenomenon where our cells get regenerated, literally plugged in and regenerated. So it makes sense if it's happening on a physical level, it's also happening on a neshama level, because things parallel and they align, which we all know how we feel when we're not refreshed. We all know when we don't have enough sleep, if it's happening physically on our cellular level and it's happening on a neshama level, it's also happening on an emotional level as well. So, okay, now I'm understanding all these different stages of sleep. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of a little bit down a rabbit hole, but that's how my brain works when I like get fascinated with something. And again, I'm like, my mind is blown by all of this and how it's just so aligned. And then I go into understanding a lot more of the chassidus of Maidani. And what I really discover is that when we wake up in the morning, right, the first thing we do, we're Yehudim, from the word hoda'ah, gratitude. And the first thing we do is we sit up, bow our head, okay, acknowledging some sort of humility. And we start off with modeh, hoda'ah, gratitude, first word. And what's amazing is that really this very, very simple 12-word tefillah encapsulates such core fundamental beliefs. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been saying, you know, when did you start saying Maidani? Before you spoke. Your mother held you and said Maidani with you. As a matter of fact, when my triplets were in the NICU, they were born at 32 weeks and 5 days. And they were in the NICU for a month, which was in and of itself a miracle. And before they were released, Baylor School of Psychology and Medicine did a study on them. Okay. And one of the first things she said to me, now, just so you understand, there are 32, 33, 34, 35, 36. These babies would not yet be born for another at least 3 to 4 weeks. Okay. And they're out in the world for 4 weeks. And she says to me, the first thing she says, you can tell these babies were held and spoken to daily. What do you think we were saying to them? Holding them and saying Maidani, saying Shema. That's what Yiddish Shemamas do. We've been saying Maidani since before we spoke. We know Maidani. So here's this tefillah that we're singing since we're verbal or nonverbal. We're hearing, it's part of our conscious, it's subconscious, it's part of our daily routine. And in it, I never knew all these, like when I started unpacking, I was like, whoa, so many core fundamental principles of our belief, of philosophy, of foundational ideas in Yiddishkeit are in this very simple 12-word tefillah that doesn't even have Hashem's name in it. So I want to do, if you're okay, I want to unpack it together, and I want to then share some more of the rest of the story, if that's okay with you. Are we good for that?
100%.
Okay. So we start off with the modeh, which is hoda'ah, obviously gratitude, expressing again, gratitude, what am I grateful for? And then we start, the next thing is ani lefanecha, me before you. And what we're really doing with that, it seems so simple, but we're really establishing there's me and you. Me and you. Who's the me? Me, the mother, the sister, the friend, the rich person, the poor person, the smart one, the not smart one, the one who, I don't know, has this amount of my 401k, the one who's this size. Who's the me? No definition. Or me. Essential me. No layers, no trappings, no nothing. Not societal, not spirit. Me. Me and you. And we're starting to say is I am start of my day with gratitude and establishing this relationship between me and Hashem. The purest me. The untaintable me. The neshama me. And we say what? Melech chai v'kayam. Who is this gratitude before? The living and eternal king. And what's fascinating is that there are many, many struggle with the belief in Hashem. Okay. Their whole movement's made out of it, right? And many believe, yeah, Hashem created the world. Fine. I'm cool with that. I get that. But he's involved in my life. No. He like set the world in motion, like step back out, sitting front row with a margarita and, bowl of popcorn, because this is going to be fun. Except we know that the more we learn, the more we understand that Hashem is involved, a melech, a king, b'chai v'kayim, living and eternal, involved in me, little old me, my life. And then when you go forward, it gets stronger. Shechazarta b'nishmasi. Now Hashem chose, while I was asleep, that my neshama that ascended on high, it got plugged in, repolished, he gave back to me. And whose neshama, whose reality, whose circumstances? Mine. Often I think in life, part of the trappings of struggles is where I'm looking at myself in comparison to what I think others people's reality is. It's a huge one, huge in the mommy field, huge in the female, huge. It's like the proportion
very
of
very natural. Like it's a natural tendency that
yes.
we have. Like
yes.
someone's doing
well, that's how we learn about ourselves.
Right. That's how we see where we could improve.
I will only challenge that often we're only comparing ourselves to what we think we know about someone else. You know, I always tell students, I'm like, you look at everyone else's social media and everyone else had a better spring break and everyone else is in a better relationship and everyone else's life, you know, their closet and pantry's organized. Like everyone else has it together except me. So what we need to say is nishma sees me. My neshama comes with all of its tafkid, its reason for existence, its story, the neshama that it's connected to. So my spouse, my children, my reality, all of my stories, even my trauma, everything is mine. And it's hand selected for me by a living and eternal king that I am deeply connected to on a very, very primal, fundamental level. And so Hashem is choosing to give it back to me because Hashem, why? And we say Bechemla. Now, I find Bechemla to be fascinating because Bechemla really, what is fundamentally Bechemla? So there's different ways to understand Bechemla, but it's kind of like a gracious compassion that Hashem is giving us back our neshama. So where does this come in? So first of all, okay, it's humbling and it's a good thing to start our day with a little humility and a little gratitude and understand that. But the other thing that is really, really interesting about Bechemla is maybe yesterday, it's really for us to know. Like maybe yesterday I wasn't my best self. And maybe yesterday kind of, I don't know, was a dud. We all have those days where we're like, whoa, what just happened here? Who was I today, right? And what we're saying is that Hashem has compassion and he gets it. He gets us. He created us. The neshama that we have is a chelik elkami mamamish, is a literal piece of Hashem above. Therefore, when Hashem gives it back to me, bechemla, with compassion, with graciousness, and then it leads to the next part. Why? Because Rabba Emunasecha, great is your faithfulness. Now, when I was researching Rabba Emunasecha, I found the classic explanation was that if we really realize, if we really wrap our brain around the idea that we have my own neshama, my own circumstance, and I'm connected eternally to Hashem, and I have gratitude, and Hashem gave me every day as a gift, then it's going to increase my faith in Hashem. It's a beautiful explanation. But then I found a beautiful explanation from the Rebbe, where the Rebbe basically goes on to say, the Lubavitcher Rebbe goes on to say, that basically Hashem has faith in me. And Hashem understands that me, with my own little superpower, with my own little issues, my own little baggage, I have what to bring to the world. And I feel like this message is so important, because I think, again, back to this whole, I look at everyone else's world and what they're accomplishing. Maybe I feel inadequate, and maybe I feel like I'm comparison, and we have to remember there's no scrap material. Every single one of us is here for a reason. Every single one of us has a unique neshama, a unique set of circumstances. And the truth is, the world needs all of us. When I realize that the master of the universe, who created all souls from eternity, from the beginning of time and pre-time, gave me my neshama and this day, I could take it on differently. Now, what's wild about this core fundamental idea is I never knew my Dani encapsulated that. I said every day. I didn't challenge it. It was great. Gratitude. Thank Hashem. Perfect. I'm here. Great day. But when I started to go into this, I'm like, whoa, this is like huge. This is amazing. This stuff is amazing. Now, what I found fascinating, I said it's just a simple 12 words. Now, when I was doing my research about mindset and happiness, I also discovered something wild. Okay. We've all had this day. I'm going to give you an example from my day. Maybe you don't relate, but if you do, cool. It's a Friday. You have more to do and less hours, less help, less sleep. To-do list is large, and you're feeling tension. You're feeling stressed. You're not comfortable. So my natural reaction sometimes is to snip at people. And I was having one of those snippy days, and I remember one of my daughters standing in front of me, and she said, "You're in a bad mood." And what's the most natural reaction to a child saying you're in a bad mood? I am not in a bad mood, right? Like, very logical, right? Makes a lot of sense. And she just looked at me, she's like, "You're in a very bad mood." But when I had done all this research, understanding human behavior and nature, I actually discovered that it takes 12 seconds of intentional rewiring, the minimum of 12 seconds, to get your brain in a different place, your mood, your mindset, your emotions to realign. So I actually did the classic parenting technique of time out, but it was for me, not for the kid. I remember I stepped into the restroom. I was like, 12 seconds, right? I got this. Who doesn't have 12 seconds to calm themselves down, to recalibrate, to not react? But to realign. And I remember thinking, okay, what kind of energy do you want in your home on a Friday afternoon? How do you want your children to experience Erev Shabbos? How do you want your children to perceive your perspective on hosting 75 people every Friday night? And with that conscious rewiring of the 12 seconds, I literally went back into the front room, to the kitchen, turned on blasting music, and it was better. So I think that what was wild to me is I was also discovering the correlation that these 12 simple words, they're just 12 words. The wiring and the mindset, the mindfulness, which we know is trendy, mantras and mindfulness. Well, you know, I always tell people, I'm like, oh, we've been doing it for thousands of years, mantras and mindfulness, right? But yet as a Jew who's been doing this, there's doing it as a checklist, because that's what I do. And then there's like, no, wait, like, how do I really do this? How do I create the impact that it needs? And it is. There was this neuropsych conference in Europe, and a doctor that were like discussing this phenomenon of people passing out once they like woke up, jumped out of bed and passed out. Now, I never had that problem because I don't wake up and jump out of bed. But I actually, when I was giving this workshop to tens and tens of people in a class, in a workshop setting, and I actually twice had people say, oh, I know, I actually, my cousin, that happens too. Like, it's a phenomenon that exists. And part of the research, the key research presentation, was one of the top neuropsych people got up and basically said that they've discovered that part of it is a blood flow issue. And if you sit up in bed for 12 seconds, it allows your blood to flow from your top to your bottom and your bottom to your top, and it recalibrates. So you can not pass out. So this doctor who's wearing a yarmulke goes up to the presenter. She's like, I don't know how to tell you this, but as Jews, we have a 12 word prayer that we say before we jump out of bed. All of this coming together is just like so mind-boggling, because I think often we take for granted a lot of the things that are fundamental to us and core principles. And obviously, they're there for a reason. And they're our gifts that we have as Jews. And they're the gifts the Torah gives us. to optimize who we are and how we navigate life. And to add one more layer to this, which I found absolutely fascinating, is it was a young man named Nachum Stillerman, and he used to deliver groceries for his father at a grocery store, and he would deliver for his father to groceries to the Rebbe Tzimchana, to the Rebbe's mother's house. And he said, you know, Rebbe Tzimchana was very motherly and nurturing to him. And then one week he said to Rebbe Tzimchana, like, what's the Rebbe's favorite prayer? Tefillah. After he left, he's like, oh my gosh, I'm mortified. Like, she's going to go ask her, like, well, I'm a teenager. Like, what am I bothering? What am I doing? You know, it was like a little bit. And he said, though, the next week he was like, he hoped she forgot about it, you know, like, delete. And the next week he went in and she said, she asked the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, my Dani, because it is something that is this great neutralizer. The old man, the rich man, poor man, the young person, everyone, no matter where you're holding in life, this is ours. And really, I found that the more I took a look at this, the bigger gift this Maida'ani became to me and to those I shared it with. And I had a student whose sister passed away suddenly. It was pretty tragic. And she had taken on, she never had a bat mitzvah, so she had a bas mitzvah by the kotel. And she had taken on Maida'ani. And I remember I went to visit her. Unfortunately, no formal shiva, but I went to visit her and she said, what if I can't say my Da'ani? I just can't. I can't talk to Hashem now. Can I think it? And what came out years later with her was that this my Da'ani was such a gift to her daily. She couldn't say it at that point. She was in so much pain, but it was her gift. And she never knew that Judaism had those gifts. And I think that it's not just the American college student who doesn't know Judaism has that gift. Sometimes the Manya who's been saying Maida'ani all her life doesn't know the gift of Maida'ani. So I'm doing all this research. And unfortunately, shortly after this young man's bar mitzvah, he actually falls into a coma from complications from his condition. And I go back and I tell my students. I'm sharing the following up, the students. And then unfortunately, before Sukkot, his soul, his neshama, returned to Hashem. And this is my son's very good friend. So I have to pull my son into the room and I have to share with him. His friend is no longer with us. And my son said something I don't think I'll ever forget. He looked at us with tears pouring down his face and he said, you know, when you told me he fell into a coma, I was very scared. And I said, okay, why? He said, because his bar mitzvah message, it wasn't your regular bar mitzvah message, mommy. It was his goodbye message to the world. And in conversation with my very, very good friend, Ita, afterwards, we were talking about, you know, what is it we can do for his neshama? This kid was so much light, so much goodness, lived each day with gratitude, personified this gratitude. And I said to her, I said, you know, the lesson of Maida'ani, of gratitude, the whole world needs. And I actually tell her every time I teach, I say to her, you know, I feel like I live all the time with Mendel. I can't wait till Mashiach comes till I get to share with him how I get to share his message with the world. So Menachem Mendel ben Daniel, his neshama should have an aliyah. And I know that every time I get to share this idea and these thoughts, I wake up different tomorrow morning. And I know that the power of gratitude is something I've been then able to bring into my life in other ways. Understanding it, knowing it, living it. And I've seen how this message has literally changed lives.
I love that he continues to have the power to shift the way we think about so many things. 12 small words, you keep saying it's 12 small words, 12 small seconds. And I think most of us, we wake up and we mumble, like we're like, our kids are already at the door. We're swinging out. We're late. We're already calculating.
1 second. That's if we don't like freak out because we woke up late and then an alarm and that, like what?
Or I also think like an alternate way that this happens, like if someone doesn't have kids or they're at a different stage, is that especially now after October 7th, the first thing I do, like if it's quiet, is I'm reaching for my phone to see what happened overnight. Did the hostages come home? Like I'm checking like what happened. Did our soldiers are okay? And I think that especially right after October 7th, I was absolutely doing this before my Dani. Like I was like in my sleep reaching for my phone because I was like,
yeah,
And I think this pause is so important. This pause, it's life shifting, because in that yeah. pause, you're grounding yourself in this other space, not yeah. the space of chaos and not the space of worry and not the space of what will be, but it's the space of I'm okay because I'm grounded in godliness. I'm okay because Hashem decided today is going to be okay no matter what. So yeah. can we talk a little bit about the hard, right? Like, let's say you know today is going to be this hard day. Today is going to be this day that you know it started off hard. It's going to probably continue hard. Now, how am I grounding myself both at the beginning of the day and maybe in the middle of the day? I'm not saying my Dani at 3 o'clock when my kids are already, it's like been a chaos day and I still have to get through 4 or 5 right. more hours. What am I doing for that?
I heard a great line that when your children are young, the years fly, but the day goes on forever. You're like, think, well, I get to bedtime safe, sane, and healthy, right? I mean, I don't think that's exclusively reserved for those with children. I think all of us, that's a very, very human experience. And I think that knowing how the brain works and human nature, and knowing that focusing on gratitude, expressing gratitude, knowing that I am empowered to rewire and create alignment between my emotions and my intellect. You know, one of the fundamental principles in Chabad Chassidus is Mayach Shalat Alev. I always say it's like the first tool Alter Rebbe gave us, right? That your mind can control your emotions. And here we're saying, yeah, it can. And now it takes work. I don't think anything that we do that's going to change our operating system or add more intentionality or more mindfulness into our day-to-day routine is an easy thing to do. But I think that once we know how to, so breathing is huge. It literally slows down your nervous system and brings your brain from the fight or flight mode to the conscious, the place where I can think, process. So I find this very empowering. Like even a toddler can learn this. Are you really upset? You want to yell. Okay, I know, I see you're feeling that way. What can you do? What can you say? If we can do that for us, 2-year-olds, we can do it for ourselves. The 2-year-old within, my inner child. I do think being aware of your patterns is huge. Like what triggers me to react that way? What gets me unhappy? That's like deeper work that takes a little bit longer. Again, that inner child needs a lot of healing. And I think that focusing on those things and knowing the power of gratitude, like I have, it's in my hands. I can't change my circumstances, but I can change how I process them, I feel that, experience them. And I think our mindset's trying this, you know, on a very personal level. My triplets were born when I was 29 years old. And we had, thank God, 6 kids. It's quite a blessing. It's what a gift. From 29 to 41, I, for some reason, other than, I don't know, Hashem had a plan, I did not get pregnant and I did not have any more children. Now, I want to pause here for anyone who is not yet blessed with children. Hashem should not withhold this blessing, share with the world. There's souls on high that need to be born, and there are families in the world that want to bring souls into the world. So Hashem could just make that match happen and help them flow down in a smoother, speedy way. Everyone should be blessed in a revealed way. Anyway, I spontaneously at 41 and through a very, like, just really spontaneously, I found that I was expecting. And then, thank God, I had another baby very shortly after, like 19 months later, which was very close for me. I never had kids that close in age. And God willing, I'm due in June, which is 15 months later. You can't tell from Zoom. Yeah.
Now I feel very excited for you. Okay, very nice.
And I have to tell you, my doctor is a religious man. He's not Jewish. He said to me, I know you. You're going to say this is God's will. I said, yes, it is. But I was sharing, I was really like thinking, like, what's the difference in experiencing this at this point at, you know, 41, 42, 44, like 43, like very close, right? And what crossed my mind is, what if I had experienced this in my 20s? 3 kids under 3. Now, I was actually telling my friend, I'm like, I've never had 3 under 3. She's like, actually, you had triplets. I'm like, oh, okay, we're fine. But what if, what, like, and people, I've had friends say, oh, I'm having anxiety for you. And I'm like, first of all, don't have anxiety for me. Like, if you want to have your own anxiety, enjoy it. I'm fine. But I think that the difference is really the mindset, the power of the mindset. The reality is the same, right? 3 pregnancies back to back, very close in age, toddlers, babies, diapers flying, thank God. But the mindset of appreciating this gift is so different. The circumstances are the same. I'm not. And I think that's the work we do as we mature. So knowing that we can do this work, And knowing that we have these daily habits that give us the ability to strengthen that muscle of gratitude, of mindset, of the gift that it gives us, and how that aligns with who we are and why we're here and how we're going to navigate something. You know, Valtrepa discusses in Tanya, two wrestlers, right? One is getting lethargic and tired. That's when the other one wins. Now, it doesn't mean we can't get tired. Of course, we could get tired. Knock yourself out. But the lethargy and the tired is really the mindset. We can handle things when adrenaline, when we have zest, when we have zeal, when we have positivity. And I think this is without not going to this toxic positivity where like we pretend fake and whatever, but to truly, truly own what that looks like and know that Yiddishkeit, Judaism gives me so many of those principles. I have those tools in my pocket. So now I got to pull them out and use them. And maybe tomorrow my Madani is going to be different.
I love that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's a mind game, but it's all in our mind.
It all starts there.
And actually, Manya, since you told me this, a year and a half ago, this whole concept, but maybe less, I'm not sure. I've actually spoken to my kids about this. Like when they come home and they're like, Oh, I had the worst day. And as a mother, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I don't homeschool, Manya, so I don't know what my kids' days are. They maybe had the worst day ever. But I always take a step back now and I'm like, well, tell me about your day. What happened? And as they go through the day, and they're like, actually, it was this good and it was that good. It was just this one thing that overpowered everything. And I'm like, I get to tell the kid, you know, you had a really bad experience, but the day was not so bad. And we can have this great evening together, right? It is so much about teaching ourselves and teaching our children to look at the chesed, right?
And reframing things.
Things are good and things are overall this really beautiful, positive experience where we have so much. And then we can appreciate and be grateful for all the things that we do have in our day every
day. I don't think it's easy, but doing better than autopilot's never going to be easy. And but it's certainly worth it.
The goal is not easy.
Right.
The goal is growth, and the growth is, you know, connecting to this infinite space.
I think if part of me thinks the goal is this inner alignment where I can understand that I'm here for a reason, the world needs me. The goal isn't happiness, right? The goal is, like, I get from these parents, like, don't you just want your kids to be happy? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm a terrible parent, but no. Like, what do you mean? Because that's very much the American mindset. I just want my kid to be happy. And I'm like, actually, I don't. They're like, well, what do you want for your kids? I always said, I want my kids to be aligned. I want them to be healthy. I want them to understand why they're here. I want them to know that the world needs them. I want them to pursue goodness and doing something productive, meaning not autopilot productive, allowing their inner light to shine, not my light, theirs. And then it leads to happiness.
I love that. So did you ever read Rabbi Twersky's books? Rabbi Avraham?
I've dabbled, but I'm not like,
oh, okay. So I'm like a big fan. Like I've been reading all of his books and rereading them since high school. And this is the thing that you see again and again that he talks about, exactly what you talk about, which is the alignment. That in that moment of alignment, that's where we find contentment and satisfaction and who we really are, because we are nothing but a piece of godliness here in this world. And this is what Tanya talks about, and this is what Chassidus talks about
extensively.
And this is basically what you were talking about when you say Maida Ani Lefanecha, is that finding that space going back to our first, who we really are, which is a part of God, and being grateful for.
You know what? You see it trickling over in many areas, because if I can see myself that way, then I can also see my children that way. That even when they're struggling, or even my spouse that way, and I could truly see them from that, hey, look, El Kami, Mal Mamish, that infinite part of God and the alignment place. I think that's so much of what Tanya does give us. Is that
right?
Is that the map to accomplishing that in a very real way?
100%. So how do we apply this in one practical, small way, aside for waking up and being intentional?
I was going to say, what do you mean tomorrow? Wake up and say my daddy.
Well, that's the easy one. Now that you've spent time explaining to us, it's the easy one. But so, how else can we apply this to our life?
I think that expressing gratitude to those around us verbally is huge. You know, you wake up and there's a coffee on the table. Your husband made it exactly the way you like it. Like, thank you. Wow. How often do we just take kind of people around us for granted? So maybe expressing gratitude and verbalizing, not just thinking it, you know, that people can't read our minds is a huge one. I think for me, I find it catching myself when I'm heading down that negative rabbit hole and saying, well, one second, I can realign. I can get to a better place. I don't have to allow just the wave of emotion and feeling overwhelmed or out of control to steer the ship. So I think owning that journey more is huge, 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 and will change our day. And sometimes I'm catching myself after the fact, and sometimes I'm catching myself in middle. But then maybe I'll start catching myself beforehand, you know, like as I start to feel those emotions rise. I think if we have more time and space to go into the things that really kind of trigger us and get us off course and understand where they're coming from, but that's a whole separate subject for a different conversation. And I think really, truly learning. One of the things I tell my kids is, it sounds a little funny, right? Those in the world that I live in College Station, who hear this, they're shocked that this is one of my messages to my children when they go away to school in yeshiva. And we have four kids away from home right now, currently. And one of my messages is, if there's something that you learn that doesn't make sense, doesn't click, doesn't resonate, and doesn't feel like it can help you in a pod, like, what does it mean? Don't run away from it and ignore it. Go to it. Get a better answer. Take a deeper dive.
And that's what we did today, which we took a deeper dive into something we might be doing by rote or something that we think we understand. And now we have dimensions.
Right. And I think that we can start to see the difference when we do things like that. And I will say that there is a website where people have been writing how this message has affected them. Okay. It's either Mitzvahs for Mendel or thankyoumendel.com. I'll send it to you so you can put it in the notes. But I think that thankyoumendel.com, where people and people have shared. I gave this once. We had a military weekend here we were hosting for young Jews in the military. And I gave the workshop in Modani. And 4 or 5 years later, we got through the website, we get a message, hey, can I get more of the Modani cards? Because we've given out thousands of, more than thousands of Modani cards from birthright trips to, you name it, groups across the world. And he said, so I was like, this is wild, like 5 years later. And he said that basically he's been sharing on his base and with his, you know, the people he's interacted with, the gift of gratitude at Modani. And he said, now I ran out of cards, I need more. So I think we have a lot. Judaism has a lot. If there's something we could take away, is that if there's something we don't understand, let's go to it, understand it, and realize the tools that we have are not just the customs, the rituals, the mitzvahs. They're not just these things we do or don't do. They're tools for transformation. And if we don't understand them, then we need to take a deeper dive.
That's beautiful. And so I want to close off this discussion with thanking you, Manya, for coming here, but also taking a minute to thank Mendel, who set you out on this journey.
Yeah.
And continues to change lives, even, you know, long after his bar mitzvah speech and his, you know, message. Yes. So that's a really, really beautiful thing.
When you meet him, when Mashiach comes and you see a shining face, you're going to be like, ah.
That's why.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So if people want to connect to you, Manya, or bring you out to talk to them or hear more about, you know, the project in Mendel's course, where do they find more information?
So the Thank You Mendel is more related to this specific campaign talk idea. And there's so much on there. If anyone specifically wants to be in touch with me, Instagram at Chabad Tamu is a great place to find us. That's our Chabad house handle. And Manya at JewishAggies.com. There you go.
I'm just saying.
You knew it. You knew it was something like that. Manya at JewishAggies.com. That's where my email lives. It was a pleasure, this conversation. And I have to thank you, because every single time I have this conversation and revisit these ideas, my Maida'ani the next day is different.
Well, I know mine will be. Thank you so much, Manya.
Yeah. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you for joining me on this past hour. I am so glad that you found our podcast and that we got to spend the time together. If you would like to nominate yourself or someone you know for a topic that they are interested, feel passionate about, or you feel passionate about, reach out to us at info@bodiessouls.com. Remember, that's two S's. If you have any feedback about the work we're doing, or if you would like to connect, you can use the same email. I hope you have a wonderful, uplifting, and amazing day.